Hello and welcome to another episode of On The Topic. This week I am showing off all my holes. I'm Alex.
And I'm still here. I'm still the man that remains. You'll understand if you've watched the film and listened to our previous episode. I'm Dan.
And yes, Dan, you are remaining because this week we are going to be talking about our film review of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, the first film to kick off Phase 5 of the MCU. The 31st film, did I say, as we were walking to Gunmorph in the last episode? I think it was,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, you did, and I can confirm that is in my notes. 31st film, and that excludes the TV series, of course.
Indeed, indeed. I do have something to comment very quickly before we catch up and talk about what we've been doing, Dan. As we were walking back from Gunmorph in the last episode, so it's in the description below, by the way, guys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. We did our on the go. So Dan and I leave my front door and we start talking about what we're looking forward to. We break and then we come back from the quantum realm. Time has changed. And then we reflect on what we've seen, but spoiler free. I listened to it back, as all good editors do. And I couldn't bother to change the editing. But I mentioned that it was the first film of Phase 4. As we're walking back, clearly I was drunk with the hype of the latest film we saw, because of course it's Phase 5. So, you know, no hate mail. It was a long day. Not a long film, but anyway, a bit of a correction there. I couldn't bother doing post-edit, so I just left it. Because, you know, warts and all with us, as you know, listener. But yeah, first film of Phase 5. So we'll talk about a little bit about the film, synopsis, reviews, our thoughts, favorite bits, not so favorite bits. You know how it goes, guys. You've been here before. And perhaps hopes for the future. And we have lots of hopes. I'm sure you do too.
Indeed.
But before we get into that, Dan, tell me, what have you been up to? We haven't seen each other in a week or two now. What?
Yeah, it's just
tell me what's going down. What's going down?
To be honest, not much has happened. I mean, work's busy, it's end of year, but our listeners don't want to hear about all that boring stuff. Let's talk about the good stuff.
Yes.
So, of course, Ted Lasso and The Mandalorian are back on Apple TV and Disney Plus, respectively, for their third seasons.
I've got a confession to make, Dan. Sorry, very quickly, because I'm going to forget. The Mando, I've just finished season two. It's one of those series. Don't tell Jon Favreau. It's one of those series that I think I enjoyed it, but it's a bit of a slow burn.
Mm.
And I think other things cropped up and that kind of took me away. And I thought, you know what? Because season three and, you know, Disney Plus, they've clearly spanked an awful lot of marketing because it's everywhere, right? Season three is advertised everywhere. Billboards, TV, radio, podcasts, it's all there. And they've got to me. So I thought, I've got to watch and finish off. So I finished off the final three episodes what do they call it? It's not episodes. They call it
chapters.
I said, thank you. Final three chapters. And I really enjoyed it. And, you know, a good ending. I won't spoil it for people who are like me. They're just catching up. But I then started the Book of Boba Fett because I understand that there is some understanding of what happens in Book of Boba Fett that goes into Mando season three. So I'm on episode two, I think, of Book of Boba Fett. But yeah, I'm slowly catching up, Dan. But it's, yeah, we're all friends here. It's a safe space. Mm. But yeah, that's my embarrassing tale of woe.
I'd say that's very wise, actually, to pick up Book of Boba Fett. Only because, I picked up season three of Mando. I was like, what? Hang on, what's going on? And actually, I was speaking to a friend at work, and he said, you know, the last episode and a half of the Book of Boba Fett is very much Mandalorian based and explains quite a lot. So
I think I read an article somewhere that said, or there was a meme or something where effectively people who handled what's Book of Boba Fett had no idea what's going on at the beginning of Mandalorian. I was like, well, I'm here now. I've finished season two. I don't want to be one of those people. And it's kind of directed the same kind of, you've watched Book of Boba, I guess.
I haven't. And this is what I mean. I picked up.
Oh, sorry. You go straight into three. Okay.
Picked up season three of Mando. I was like, I don't quite know how.
Right. Okay.
Grogu's back here. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't want to do a Dan. It's called like that. So yeah, I've it looks very much the same. It looks the same. It feels the same. It's written very much the same. I don't know who's writing Book of Boba Fett, but it's almost like a I guess another series. It's in very much in the same kind of vein. It doesn't look or feel different than any other one. So it's quite easy to transition back to back. So I'll probably get through Book of Boba. I've got a flight coming up, so I'll probably watch that, and then we'll come back, smash onto Mando season 3.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea. But Ted Lasso, I love it. I know we've talked about it before. It came up in our most anticipated, put my teeth in, 2023. I just love it. I think it's phenomenal. I'm not going to do any justice by saying it's about football / soccer for our American listeners, but I'd say it's up there with Sex Education. It's very endearing, you know, lots of character building, and the cast is phenomenal. Just brilliant. You know, you got Jason Sudeikis, Hannah Waddingham, Nick Mohammed, Juno Temple, Brett Goldstein. Oh, they just make it. I swear, if anyone checks this out, they will get roped in and they will love it. It's funny. It's sad. It's feel good. It's got everything. It has everything. On the music side, I've been listening to All Time Low's new album, Tell Me I'm Alive. Got some absolute pop punk goodness in there. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
And the Gospel Youth are teasing a new single for this Sunday at the time of recording. I think I caught it on their stories. It was called The Good Days.
Mm.
So one to look forward to. And Alex, I don't know if we've talked about this on a previous episode, but I watched Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah. No, I don't think we did talk about it on air. I think we talked about it off. But yeah.
Mm. After watching the original for the first time, probably years, I thought, oh my God, like, how can people hold this so in high regard? It's absolute shit.
Nostalgia.
Yeah.
Dan, you know better. This is what this podcast is all about. It's nostalgia. Purely it's coasting on 80s and 90s, and that's why people love it.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy it, but hey, I'm sorry to anyone that I might have offended. However, I'm going to put it out there, Top Gun Maverick is phenomenal. It is brilliant.
Yeah, I think we were saying... I think it was even when we were walking to cinema, perhaps the other week. I didn't want to like it. I'm not anti Tom Cruise, but I just, we talked about it before, I just don't like some aspects of him. But you know, you can't deny his craft. It's just worlds apart from anyone else. You know, he's hands on producing, directing, participating, also known as acting. And he's very good. But you can't deny also that Miles Teller, I think, he almost stole the show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how Tom Cruise allowed Miles Teller to be cast, because I think he actually upstaged Tom at certain bits. Like, he was brilliant. Like, the chemistry, the emotion, you kind of felt that raw anger with that history that that Maverick had. It's just, it was very well done.
Yeah.
There's no other way to describe it, really.
I totally agree. And Miles Teller looks brilliant with a moustache. Let's just be honest. But that's it. That's all I've been up to. Not much other than working. What about you, Alex? What's going on? What's happening?
Same as you, working. What I would say is I have watched end-to-end The Recruit on Netflix. Have you heard of that?
I think we were talking about this when we went to cinema, didn't we?
Perhaps.
I remember you talking about it.
Yeah, but I finished it. I almost binged watched it. It's got Laura Haddock in. And she, if people may not know or recognise the actor's name, but I think she was in the In-Betweeners film, the first one.
Mm.
I think she was Will's love interest. You know, the intelligent, confident, girl of the girl group. I'm not sure if this resonates with you. If you remember the In-Betweeners film, Dan, where they go to Magaluf or something, and it all goes terribly wrong. Anyway, great film. I'm not sure if it translates to other countries, but it's called The In-Betweeners, guys and girls, and it's. I think it's the creme de la creme of British comedy.
I'm sure the Americans did try to replicate it, didn't they? And it bombed. because it was never going to capture that. I mean, I don't want to offend our American listeners, but it was never going to sort of go well. You can't replicate British humour, I'm afraid.
It just doesn't translate, I don't think, not in terms of, you know, just how ridiculous our society is at times and the British kind of education system. I know the American one has always been done to death in film. And you've got the different school groups. It's just, there's nothing else compares, I think, to the British school system in just its ludicrousy and lunacy. And they capture it so well. But anyway, she's the love interest in that film. She's one of the main characters in this TV program. Apart from being gorgeous, she can also act phenomenally. And she's a Russian in this one. And it's very, very good. And it's all about a lawyer who ends up working for the legal counsel, the CIA. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek. I wouldn't say it's comedy, all-out comedy, but it's got a comedy undertones, quite tongue-in-cheek. And it's all about how he gets himself into trouble and some clandestine activity when obviously he's not a field agent, he's a lawyer. And there's an overarching story with Laura Haddock's character. And it's very good. A bit of cloak and dagger, let's say a bit tongue-in-cheek at times, but it really captured my attention and it's been renewed for season two. Because, of course, for those who are out there and know, Netflix are known for ditching popular or seemingly unpopular to them, but popular TV shows. And the reason being is, Dan, I'm not sure we've talked about this before, so apologies if we have, listener. But the reason why they ditch programs is because they take it purely on how quick someone starts and finishes to the end of that TV show.
Which is bonkers.
Which is freaking nuts, because we're busy people, Dan, aren't we? Different reasons, but we do live busy lives, and the modern man or woman does live a busy life. And yes, okay, you could say it was a compelling argument that you're going to sit down and smash through all the episodes. Fine. But what happens if you go on holiday or go away for business, or you've got a busy month coming up with, you know, birthdays or dinner dates and friends, and you come back to it? Well, your interest doesn't count, because if they say, well, you've had a gap and therefore you don't like it, and therefore it's not going to be renewed, and therefore your favourite show doesn't get renewed. I just find it really frustrating. But they've obviously done a lot of their research. They know what makes money, what doesn't. But anyway, this one has been renewed and they tell you as much, which is good, because you don't want to get invested and then they bin it off and then they leave it on a cliffhanger, which they've done quite a few times. But anyway, my rant's over. Really enjoyed that. So if you like a bit of tongue-in-cheek espionage, The Recruit is quite good. Computer game-wise, Dan, I finished Hogwarts Legacy. Well, as much as I finished the storyline, I've still got quite a few side quests to do. Very good. Very, very good. I don't think I've apologised for playing it, but we've talked about it before on the podcast, so I won't go through it again. Hold off your hate mail and listen to a couple of episodes previously, because I talk about it there. But I finally got around to completing it, and it's really good. So thoroughly enjoying that, Dan.
Good stuff.
But otherwise, no, that's I think that's for me. I talked about the Mando season two, so yeah, we're up to date.
I think we are. So that must mean, Alex, it's time to dive into the review.
So, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Who's the star, Dan? Who's in this one?
Right, we've got Paul Rudd, who returns as Scott Lang, or Ant-Man. We've got Evangeline Lilly, who returns as Hope Van Dyne, or the Wasp. Jonathan Majors as the next big bad. Shut up, Dan. Kang the Conqueror. Catherine Newton as Cassie Lang.
A recast of that character.
It's like the third actress to play Cassie Lang. David Dismalchian as Veb. Katie O'Brien as Gentora. William Jackson Harper as Quaz. Bill Murray as Lord Kryler. And Michelle Pfeiffer as Janet Van Dyne. Corey Stoll as Darren Cross / MODOK. And we've got Michael Douglas as Hank Pym. Additionally, we do briefly see Randall Park, who reprises his role as FBI agent Jimmy Woo.
Oh, yes.
Very briefly at the start.
All 10 seconds.
Yeah. Along with Greg Turkington as the Baskin Robbins. Storm Urgent, Dale from the very first film. Nice little throwback. Good and of course, Dale. The film's post-credit scene features uncredited cameo appearances from Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson, reprising their roles as Loki and Mobius, M. Mobius from the Loki series.
We should probably pause a second, Dan, and dust off the klaxon, because I think we could be getting to some muddy, dangerous waters for those who haven't watched the film. What do you reckon?
Yeah. It's already too late.
It is. But let's sound her anyway. Here we go. Good. There she is, the old faithful. Been a while since we've used that klaxon, and we'll be using it again soon, sure enough, no doubt, when we go to the cinema to watch John Wick 4. But anyway,
exciting times.
Back to this one, yeah. So an all-star cast, some familiar faces and some new ones. Budget for this one, Dan? 200 mil, wasn't it?
Yep, 200 mil. And since we've did our On The Go, the box office hasn't budged that much. $463.8 million.
Which I think is considered by Marvel standards a flop. If it gets anywhere close to, I think, 750 plus, they deem it as not bad. But yeah, 463.8 mil. And that's international markets, that's not domestic. So, we can talk at the end about what, if that shows anything really, but it's not necessarily plain sailing for the MCU anymore.
No.
There's been some recent news, hasn't there, in terms of a reshuffle and a new stack, isn't it?
Indeed. Quantumania is directed by Peyton Reed, written by Jeff Loveness, produced by Kevin Feige and Stephen Broussard, music by Christoph Beck, and the runtime is just over 2 hours, 124 minutes.
Well, the question is, Dan, were they a good 124 minutes?
Well, we should probably talk a little bit about the plot.
Indeed. What is in that runtime?
Right, so we start off with the film with Janet Van Dyne. So we get a flashback. There she is, entrapped in the quantum realm, and she encounters an exiled traveller named Kang.
Just on this, because I'm going to forget, and I'm really apologise, Dan, for interrupting you, but it's not a massive plot point, but otherwise I just won't wrench at the end. I really liked how this started. A strong, intriguing, mysterious start to the film. We know how it's going to end up, but we don't know how it started. And I like the fact that you've got this traveller who's crash-landed effectively in the quantum realm, and he's out of the wreckage, and he's like, where am I? I loved it. It's great.
Just got a little tie into one of the origins of Kang.
Yes, indeed.
Or A Kang.
A Kang, a version of that character, yeah.
Whether he's still alive or not after this film, I mean, we'll talk about it later. Because you had a theory.
Oh, yes.
And then we cut to the present day. So after the Battle of Earth, Scott Lang has somehow become a successful memoirist and is living happily with his girlfriend, Hope Van Dyne. Scott's now teenage daughter, Cassie, has become a political activist, resulting in her having a strained relationship with her father. Well, they always say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, because it's actually him bailing his daughter out of prison.
Yeah, and apparently it said, was it a second time in prison, I think they commented on. So yeah, she's been in trouble during the blip years and looks like she's not letting up.
So they go to visit Hope's parents, Hank and Janet. And Cassie reveals she has been working on a device that can establish contact with the quantum realm. So upon learning of this, Janet panics and forcefully shuts off the device, although it's only supposed to map the quantum realm, was it?
Yep.
But hey, this is a plot hole in itself. We talked about plot holes, and I'm sure we'll do a volume 2 at some point. But a message was received, resulting in a portal opening and pulling the five of them into the quantum realm. And somehow they survive.
They do. Because if you cast your mind all the way back to the first film, Dan, and then subsequently the second, there's a real risk if you go quantum, you could lose your mind, you could endanger your ability to grasp reality. But yeah, seemingly all of them survive the trip. They don't collide into anything as they're falling and they're shrinking. They don't lose their mind, but yet, seemingly they dust themselves off. And they're roaming free in another universe.
Mm. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute when one of our protagonists appears.
Mm.
We'll get to that shortly. Hope, Janet and Hank meet with Lord Kryler. No, sorry, I've gone too far. Scott and Cassie are found by natives who are rebelling against their ruler, while Hope, Janet and Hank explore a sprawling city to get answers. So Hope, Janet and Hank meet with Lord Kryler. There we go. This is where I got in a bit too quickly. A former ally of Janet's who reveals that things have changed since she's left the Quantum Realm and that he is now, in fact, working for Kang.
Played by Bill Murray, isn't it, that guy? Kryler.
Yeah. Hmm. To be quite honest, I didn't get it.
No. I think we were talking about this on the way back. On the go episode just before this one. I find that in films now, Bill Murray ends up becoming a meme of himself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like he turns up and everyone's like, ah, it's Bill Murray. Bill Murray's kind of like fourth wall, kind of winks at you as he plays himself, but not. And it doesn't really work for me. And he's got a semi-important role in this, but doesn't really... They could have progressed that scene without him.
Yeah. I mean, Kryler could have been anyone.
Well, yeah, or even... He doesn't even have to be of anyone of note, of importance. They kind of feel like they've shoehorned him in. And I do wonder how much they paid for Bill Murray to be in it, because I wouldn't say it was worth it.
No, I agreed. The three are forced to flee and steal Kryler's ship. The Langs, meanwhile, are told by rebel leader Gentora that Janet's involvement with Kang is indirectly responsible for his rise to power. We learn more about that in another sort of flashback later on.
Mm.
The rebels soon come under attack by Kang's forces led by MODOK, who is revealed to be Darren Cross, having survived his apparent death at Scott's hands. Now, our five heroes get sucked into the Quantum Realm and they're okay.
Mm.
Darren Cross, however, is a massive head with little arms and little legs. Now, I'm going to throw it out there. I thought MODOK looked brilliant, but actually...
Did you?
Yeah, well, when he's got all the armor up and the mask...
Yeah.
Brilliant. But actually, when that mask is up, it looked really bad. I think that's one of the times that I thought, you know what, the CGI is not that good.
Yeah. I just think they could have done better. I mean, MODOK's really difficult to get right. It doesn't really translate properly from the comic book panels. On the comic book pencils and colouring, it looks odd, but it can work. But in real world, I don't think it does. And it looked stretched and then it looked off because it looked like, I don't know, it just...
It's like one of those Snapchat filters, isn't it? Where
you're right,
stretches your face. You sort of put it up and it goes bloop. It's like that.
And you could say, because he doesn't have a neck, he's kind of fixed in one place and that kind of explains why it doesn't move. But I just found in the comics or even on the animated series, MODOK tends to have more animation in his face. The cheeks move.
Mm.
There's a little bit of direction, but in this, there isn't. And I think it came across quite wooden.
It's almost like he's had Botox, Alex. Like he's just sort of stuck. He can't really move.
There might be Botox services in the quantum realm. You know, some aliens want to, you know, to avoid the inevitable look of age. But given how big his screen is, I don't think it was pulled off particularly well. I liked how they wanted to, and you're right, in the armor looked great. That looked phenomenal. But yeah, with seeing Cross's face on it, it didn't look good.
Yeah. Aboard Kryler's ship, Janet confesses to Hope and Pym why she wanted nothing to do with the Quantum Realm again. So Kang claimed that he and Janet could both escape the Quantum Realm if she helped him rebuild his multiversal power core. Now, they managed to repair it, but Janet touches it and gets a vision. Mm. She sees a vision of Kang conquering and destroying entire timelines. Kang reveals that he was exiled by his own variants out of fear, which drove Janet to turn on him. Although she was outmatched, Janet used the pin particles to enlarge the power core and render it unusable. So she essentially blows it up to be massive. You can't do nothing with this big bastard ball or whatever it was. Kang, having regained his powers, eventually conquered the quantum realm afterwards. Now the Kangs are taken to Kang, who demands that Scott helps get his power core back, or else he's going to kill Cassie. Now, this is a bloke that's killed Avengers across all timelines.
Mm.
And there's one bearing, actually, I sort of picked up on. I don't know why I sort of really honed in on it. He talks about killing Thor.
Yes.
Why that specific Avenger? Why did he specifically pick Thor to tell Scott? Yeah.
It might be that this answers an age-old argument of who is the strongest Avenger. And don't forget, Thor is... He's in most timelines that we know of. He's very old. He's millennia old, isn't he? He doesn't age or ages slowly. And he's a god. So it makes sense, actually, if Kang's looking at the past, and there are versions... I'll talk about this at the end. There are versions of Kang's that are in ancient Egypt, it would make sense that he's the one person he sees as a threat because he can crop up at any part of a timeline.
Hmm.
It's not just now, Earth 616, the last 20 years. It's throughout time. And therefore, you have a number of different jump on and off points in time, conceivably, that a Thor would exist and could be a threat. Because Thor isn't, contrary to Love and Thunder, he's not a pushover. No, he wields the power of the gods in Mjolnir. He can fly. He's incredibly strong. And he's good looking, which doesn't hurt. And all the other Avengers, they're human or they're superhuman, but ultimately, they only crop up in a very short timeline. And if you crop that timeline, you get rid of them all because they no longer exist. You know, imagine you got rid of Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Well, he wouldn't find half the Avengers, or the half the Avengers would never come to pass because S.H.I.E.L.D. would still go on being Hydra, etc., etc. Whereas you're always going to have Thor. Thor's always going to be out there kicking butt in the other realms. So I think that's, for me, that's why I've obviously read into it, and I've obviously read too much into it. But I think that's probably for me why he picked Tom Thor.
Mm.
But that's just my theory.
Oh, that's a good take. Scott's taken down to the core's location and shrinks down, where he nearly drowns in a sea of variants of himself. It's really weird, isn't it?
It's one of the most impressive parts of the CGI of end of phase four. Well, all of phase four, let's face it. Phase four is a bit of a dumpster fire in terms of CGI and VFX. This was the most impressive, I think, because they're all duplicated. You've got the Baskin and Robbins version, tongue in cheek, blah, blah, blah. But purposely, the way they've done it is all the little Ant-Mans look like little ants.
Yeah.
And I think it's lovely kind of symmetry of what we've seen in the other films where the ants help him. But obviously in this film, there aren't really any ants until the final act.
No.
But he is the ant, that makes any sense. So I thought it was really smart and a great bit of direction.
It's like the way all the variants help him up to get to the core as well. It's very much how ants actually behave in real life.
For the greater good.
Which is brilliant. I thought it was a really good bit of CGI. Hope arrives and helps him acquire the power core. However, Kang goes against his deal and capturing Janet and destroying her ship with Hank on it.
Shock.
I thought he was dead.
Yeah.
Gene thought he was brown bread.
Mm.
After being rescued by his aunt, now, we obviously didn't touch on this. At the start of the film, he had an ant farm, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
And he'd essentially given them tech, which they use in the quantum realm, of course, where time is irrelevant. These ants are massive, and they've essentially made their own city, would you say?
Yeah, society. Time has passed so much so that they've advanced and they've got their own civilization, and they're a technologically advanced race. In the grand scheme of things, it's not too wacky, but it as you say out loud, it's a bit bananas, but it kind of makes sense in the round. And yeah, they end up being in this ant farm. They get sucked into the quantum realm, of course, as they traverse and they go down into to the quantum environment. Time has passed and they end up being these advanced beings. It's it's an interesting spin on things.
I believe the terms are they rapidly evolved and became hyper-intelligent.
That's it.
Hank helps Scott and Hope as they make their way to Kang. Cassie rescues Gentora as they commence an uprising against Kang and his army. Now, during the fight, Cassie convinces Darren to turn sides and fight Kang, though he sacrifices his life in the process.
Thinking that he's an Avenger.
Yeah, it's really awkward.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if they try to make it funny or sad. It was just like, yeah, this isn't the one.
Yeah, tonally, I thought it was a little bit off, but I think they got the awkward aspect down to a T. I think he turned too easily, Dan.
Yeah.
Because he's been down the quantum realm for so long. He's very bitter. The way he looks and the way he is a result of the events of the first film, the very end, the final chapter. You're not going to change your mind within seemingly a day's worth of coming across your old friends and colleagues. All that hate and pent-up anger, and then you're turning against your malevolent ruler. I don't get it. For the purposes of the film, he needs to tie him up. He's far too powerful. He cannot return back to 616. But it felt a little bit odd, a little bit rushed, a little bit convenient. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine his squidged head hovering around on planet Earth?
It does happen in the comics, of course.
It does. It does.
It's part of AIM, but no.
I don't think it's Darren Cross in the comics, though, is it? I'm sure it's someone else.
I don't think it is, yeah. I think he's actually a MODOK who's been created by AIM to take on the Avengers.
Much like our favourite computer game.
Ugh.
Oh, I know. We don't need to talk about that. I'm sure for any of our regular listeners, they'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Oh, yes. Get in and see. Not our listeners, the game, of course.
Oh, yes. Good God, yes. Janet fixes the power core as she, Pym, Hope and Cassie jump through a portal home, but Kang attacks Scott, nearly beating him into submission. Now, for a bloke that is pretty damn powerful, we literally saw him wiping people out with his, essentially power burst through his fists.
Yeah.
Why is this any different? He could have literally zapped Scott and turned him into dust. But they go toe to toe. They're duking it out. And then Hope returns and together with Scott destroys the power core with a combination of Pym particles. So she doesn't just use the large ones, she uses the small ones as well. So obviously, if he goes mad and knocks Kang into it, causing him to be pulled into oblivion.
Or does he?
Or does he? Mm. We'll talk about your theory in a minute. Now, of course, this seems a bit too easy for me.
Yep.
The portal's already closed, but Cassie reopens the portal on her end for Scott and Hope to return home.
Of course she does.
As Scott happily resumes his life, he begins to rethink what he was told about Kang's death being the start of something terrible happening But he brushes it off. It's quite a good sequence, actually.
You know, it really is.
Road. He's all happy. He's jolly. He's got these great thoughts. And also, he's like, wait, hang on. And you can just, I think the music sort of brings the mood down a little bit.
It's almost like everything pauses. He's like, is that what happened? Everything's fine. No, everything's fine. There's a real brilliant directing and writing. And there's a palpable sense of dread.
Mm.
And then suddenly he goes, nah, it's fine. And then he goes to the birthday party. But yeah, I've got some thoughts.
And roll credits.
But not any old credits, because there are two then end credit scenes, aren't they, Dan?
There is. So the first one, at the mid-credit scene, we see numerous variants of Kang. They're concerned by Earth-616's increasing interest in the multiverse and plan their uprising. This is the moment where we were talking about on our On The Go that Jonathan Majors probably had so much fun recording it.
Yeah.
Filming. So many different versions of him. It's brilliant. And then post-credit scene, we cut to Tom Hiddleston, or Loki, and Mobius, played by, what's his name? Wow. Owen Wilson, that's it.
Owen Wilson.
They locate another Kang variant named Victor Timely on Earth in the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they're discussing how, Loki knows how dangerous Kang is, but Mobius seems to have sort of played it down.
Yeah.
And that's where we leave it. And of course, we probably won't see these two again until season two, which I believe is out in the summer.
It is, yeah. June or July, I think. But things still in the air in terms of whether that timeline's going to happen. But given Ant-Man references directly Loki season two, I don't see why they wouldn't keep to that one anyway.
Mm. There seems to be a lot of rumours about what's being dropped and what's being reshuffled. I'm not quite sure what to believe, because it's nothing really come from the mouth of Marvel Studios. It just seems to be all the media outlets.
Yeah.
And some of them talk shit every day anyway. I think they do it just for a nibble to see how people react. But
I agree. Well, all you got to do is look at the comments. And the comics blow up. People have got opinions and thoughts. You know, are there... it's a comic book fatigue and the rest of it. So I agree. I think it's just clickbait.
One opinion that I did agree with, actually, because on our On The Go episode, I said at the start, I wasn't too sure if I was that excited for Quantumania.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is literally quantity over quality. I feel like they're just throwing so much at us. Phase four, just sort of like, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some good stuff in phase four. You know, we did plenty of reviews throughout 2021, 2022 on some of those series. But there's some of them I was just like, yeah, do you know what? I don't really care for it.
I agree.
And yeah, I think sometimes when you've got so much being thrown at you, it's just a bit like, go on, guys. Just dial it back to phases one to three, and actually, you're probably onto something. You're sort of destroying your own chemistry, really.
Yeah.
But hey, that's my thoughts.
100%. I think you've nailed it. You know, whether you believe it or not, Feige has said that he was using phase four as a reset and an opportunity to try out new things and to test. So we saw that straight to TV, straight to stream, etc. in the TV series. And I think he did that. But you look at a lot of the sequels now, and they're falling short. They're falling way short of the quality than we were expecting in phases two and towards phase three.
Mm.
And I think they're probably coming undone by relying on an audience and a fan base that they think would just stick with them through and through. And actually, I think they're starting to realise that they can't do that. I mean, you've got you got a sacking of prominent exec members of Disney. Rumoured because of the VFX issues and the feedback from the audiences. And you've only got to see that through most of Phase 4. I'm not talking about the TV series now, I'm talking about the film. Most VFX, bar what we just talked about in the last 10 minutes, has been quite poor.
Mm.
And a lot of the outsourced VFX artists have been quite vocal about pressured time. We talked about it before, didn't we?
Yeah.
Pressured timelines, uncertainty, understaffing, rushing to deliver. And it's just, you can see it. And I think they do have to scale back. I don't think the storylines are strong enough. I certainly don't think the sequels should have probably happened. There was nothing wrong with this film, but that's not a glowing review.
No, I mean, we'll talk about critical response in a minute. But I'm interested about your theory about the end of the film.
Oh, yeah. So as we're walking down, I turned to Dan at literally the end of the screens. Screen was rolling, the credits. I said, did you notice anything particularly about when Scott was walking down the road and he was wondering, you know, is everything okay? And no, it's fine. And he was questioning himself. And you were just enjoying the film. You weren't like me and being a little bit autistic. And I said, did you not notice the green and the purple tones? And if you look, I've since gone back on YouTube. There are people walking past him, so it's a perfect kind of mirror image. So you finish as you start.
Yeah.
And some people say it's the best way to kind of finish a story, like it's that familiarity, full 360, full circle kind of thing. Well, they do this in this film. So he's walking down the road, chipper. There's a lovely theme tune. He's having lots of lovely times, high-fiving people and taking pictures with dogs, etc. And he does the same at the end. But this time at the end, there's people running past in purple jumpsuits and there's lots of pops of vibrant green here and there. And I wonder whether this is an Ant-Man is one of the first to succumb to Secret Wars. And this is where he exits the MCU as of now. And we see him next in Secret Wars. Because if you notice, do you remember what the last words were at the end of that second end credit scene, Dan? What are the words? Someone will return. Do you remember what it said?
Was it Kang?
Yeah. Not Scott Lang. Not Ant-Man. Kang will return.
Mm.
Now, that obviously is a nod, obviously, to every single film that's probably going to come out from now on will involve Jonathan Majors. Fine. But I also wonder whether that fight scene at the end, we all thought it was a bit too convenient that Hope came out of a portal, which they, I don't know how they even managed to create a new one so quickly, jump out, save him. It's all very easy to get a Kang who in the past has killed members, variants of the Avengers. So he's very, very strong. He ends up apparently carking it due to a freak accident with these imploding, exploding power cores. And then they're skipping down the streets again. Mm. I wonder whether any of that actually happened and Ant-Man is captured and he's in a holding pen, living a reality that's not real, waiting for the other Avengers to join him on Battle World or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It all seems far too convenient and that'd be a good way to kind of brush under the carpet, semi-piss-poor writing.
Yeah, we'll talk about critical response because it leads into one of my theories.
Yeah,
and of course it's something we can sort of deep dive into another episode, but I'll brush on it.
Hit me.
So Rotten Tomatoes reported an approval rating of 47%, and that is an average rating of 5.6 out of 10 based on 373 reviews at the time of recording. The site's critics' consensus reads: Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania mostly lacks the spark of fun that elevated earlier adventures. I mean, number two is questionable, but
yeah, I don't know about that.
But Jonathan Majors Kang is a thrilling villain poised to alter the course of the MCU. Totally agree. I think we already said in the On The Go episode, Jonathan Majors pretty much steals the show.
Yeah.
Because his calm demeanor is very unnerving. And then when he's pissed, he's pissed.
Yeah, pure anger.
Phenomenal. Owen Gleiberman, this is where I'm going to run into my theory, from Variety, was critical of the film, calling it at once fun and numbing, and stating, if this was what Phase 5 looks like, God save us from Phases 6, 7, and 8. Now, this is my question for you, Alex. Obviously, we know we're only running up to Phase 6.
Mm.
Do you see a Phase 7 and 8? Because I've got a reboot theory.
Okay. So what you think, there will be MCU films, but not as we know it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So let's talk about the 2015 series of Secret Wars, which was written by Jonathan Hickman and Esad Ribic.
Yeah. Yeah.
My cat wants to leave the room. Such a useless assistant.
Off you go, Quill.
Off you go, buddy. So a cosmic natural disaster that ended in the complete destruction and improbable recreation of the Marvel multiverse.
Yes.
Now, in that storyline following the Avengers and the New Avengers Time Runs Out arc, our heroes fought to save the multiverse after a series of incursions. Now, you'll know that word from Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, which started destroying different realities. Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and the Illuminati of Earth 838 tried to stop our reality of Earth 616 doing just that. In fact, the movie ended with Stephen Strange dashing off with Clea, played by Charlize Theron, to prevent another incursion. Now, back in 2015's Secret Wars, a race of Beyonders tried to wipe out the multiverse. A cocktail of surviving dimensions were stitched together as battle world where survivors fought to topple the Beyonders and Doctor Doom, who appointed himself God Emperor Doom.
Yes.
Now, at the end of all of this, reshuffles, and essentially we have the current comic runs.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great... It's going to be a way to reboot the MCU, I think.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that more a little bit later. Karen James from BBC stated that the movie has Marvel's next big villain, but other than that, has nothing to offer beyond drab-looking action.
Mm.
All harsh. So what were your overall thoughts, Alex? Do you agree with the critics?
Not quite so harsh with the critics, but I'm not quite so positive with the audience. Apparently the audience is 83% Rotten Tomatoes, and their summary is that the plot was a bit of a mess, but overall it starts phase five of the MCU with a colourful creative thrill ride that will leave you wanting to see much more of Jonathan Majors as Kang. Now, I don't disagree with the final part, but I wouldn't say it's particularly interesting thrill ride. It's my least favourite of the trilogy.
Is it? You think it's worse than Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I think so. And the reason being is I think it's lost all kind of charm. I didn't like Corey Stoll's MODOK. We talked about it before, so I won't say it again. I'm really struggling, Dan, and this really came out quite very, very early on. Janet's backstory... She kept on saying, I can't tell you how I've been. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. And even when they're in the fucking quantum realm, she still doesn't want to talk about it. It's only then halfway through the film that she then decides to tell them a little bit. And I'm like, well, if you're talking at dinner, at the beginning of the film, they're all down the dinner table and they've got the enlarged pizza and they find out that they've got this secret project. She should be losing her shit about hearing that her granddaughter is dabbling in tech that can contact an evil world where an evil ruler takes place.
Mm.
It's only until she realizes that data is being transferred in real time there and then that she says, turn it off. And it seems quite an explosion of fear and anxiety, where if she was really that bad and Kang is really that bad and she was really sought after by the realm's inhabitants, she should be panicking at the dinner table, but she's not. She's quite happy to go down to the basement and to entertain this little conversation until a switch is flipped. Now, sure, she'd be going, guys, look, I've got something to tell you. I was having it off with Bill Murray and I was a terrorist. There's a really bad guy down there called Kang. Don't turn it on. But she doesn't. I know it's convenient writing. It wouldn't happen otherwise. That'd be the end of the film, roll credits. But I'm really struggling then for her to then, even when at the bottom, to go, she says, I can't tell you now, but I'll tell you later. And they just run off and you see more of the scenery. And she still doesn't really tell people what's happened. I just don't get it. I really don't get it. And I think because she never really tells people what's going on and she's really forthcoming, but there's no real reason for her not to. It's not like she was a mass genocide kind of lieutenant of the resistance. She didn't really do that bad stuff. Do you know what I mean? She's down there for 30 years. She had to make a life of her own. She shacked up with someone and she was part of a resistance. Fine. Why the hesitancy to kind of share that with her family? Even the events of post Endgame, you know, I don't get it. And I think because of that, I think hope takes a back seat in this film. And not that I need to see more of that character. You know, Evangeline Lilly was okay in Ant-Man and the Wasp, but I think she's almost a nothing in this film.
Yeah,
and I found that a little bit odd because she's in the main title, and it made sense from I'm not happy with you, Scott, and we were kind of together, but we're not kind of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Ant-Man 2, effectively. In this, I liked how the film started, how she's built a career and a new kind of tech company, and she's doing lots of good, you know, philanthropic things. That's it. That is all the film has, and she has all of 45 seconds worth of screen time dedicated to her. And what remains really doesn't give you then an awful lot more of that character. And I don't know, Dan, I struggled with that a bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, I mean, when you talk about the plot, I do agree. It was a bit of a shaky start to phase five. You know, I think when we talked about it on the lead up to going to cinema, when we were walking, doing the on-the-go episode, to make a real statement about the next big bad, you kind of need someone to be killed off.
Yeah.
Something to show Kang's real power. I mean, all right, okay, he's in the Quantum Realm, he's blasting people to bits, but you need a major player to be taken out.
Yeah.
For people to go, oh, fuck. You know, we're really in trouble. It's happening. Mm. But we never really got that. You know, all of our players survived. We don't quite know where this iteration of Kang is.
No.
I don't think he's dead.
He's not. Can't be. Too powerful, given what he was saying before in terms of killing the Avengers. Yeah, I'm struggling. I think they've got a lot to do next, either in terms of that character, because he's overpowered and then he's depowered at the final scene. But also just to kind of tidy up some of those characters who perhaps really lost out, I think, in terms of storyline. That's not to say that it was all bad. I think it was just a very weak kind of outing to what should be quite, as you say, a strong start given what phase four delivered for us. You know, I liked the flashbacks of Janet's time in the Quantum Realm. As I mentioned at the beginning, I thought it was smart and it was good. But there wasn't really enough of it. I think it'd been quite nice to see the events of just before Kang turned up in the Quantum Realm, who banished him and perhaps why. How was he captured? Who was party to pressing that button? And how did he then crash land there? I think it would have been a nice way then to kind of go in full circle to the end credit scene. And I don't think the film would have suffered, personally. And I like that there was some good reference to Cassie during her time during the blip, you know, her father was away, so she was trying to find a way to contact him and research the quantum realm, and she took up the mantle and she got her own suit. So those were good bits, but it was really rather lackluster.
Yeah, I also found it quite sort of busy, quite a noisy film. You know, you can sort of tell from when I was reading out the plot, there's a lot of backwards and forwards.
Yes.
Just a bit too much, and you're sort of trying to keep up with where everyone is, what's going on. It was just a lot to sort of like try and concentrate on. I mean, for me, you know, sometimes it's like a linear film and sort of enjoy it. And a lot of MCU films are like that. But again, I think sort of going back to, you know, their whole formula, and I think they're probably just experimenting a little bit too much now.
Yeah, I agree.
You need to sort of draw it back. And if you're going to build it up to these two big films in 2025 and 2026, you need to just dial it down a little bit. You know, you need to bring back the quality over quantity. Overall, I'd probably say it's a mid-tier MCU film. I probably enjoyed it more than the second one. So
okay.
I think it's because it's really weird, quite wonderful. I mean, bar the Snapchat filter on Darren Cross's face, I'd actually probably say some of the effects were quite good.
Yeah, I mean, very colourful, very vast as they're flying across the quantum realm. That didn't fall down. But yeah. Okay, I mean, yeah. Well, look, we appreciate and acknowledge differing views, right, Dan? So interesting that perhaps slightly more favourable than the second one. But hey, you know, everyone can have a different perspective. That's fine.
100%. And overall, apart from Jonathan Majors, I actually found Michael Douglas stole the show as well.
Right, yeah.
Thought he was very good in this. A little bit about the future. So in February, or last month, Douglas said he would be interested in returning for a fourth film, but only if Pym died in it, while Broussard said that he had started to discuss a potential fourth film with Feige and Reed. Do you see a fourth film? Is it worth having a fourth film?
Not anymore.
No.
I agree that Pym should be killed off, but he should have been killed off in this film in order to make it an impactful Kang. I think they missed a very open goal there.
Yeah. Well, that's it from us. On to the listener. Right, so the first one, we've got a couple on the socials. We've got Aaron first. He says, it's 100% Ant-Man's fault. He's coming for our universe. Mm. Would you agree?
Don't know. Interesting one to debate, because if it's this version of Kang, this variant, I don't know. I mean, he arguably, because it's Janet's fault, really, because he never got revenge on Janet, and she still kind of held him prisoner. So I don't know if it's actually Scott's. And given that he's seen variations of Scott's before, why would he particularly go after this particular one over any of the others?
Mm.
It is an interesting concept, but I wonder whether he's could be more pissed at Janet because she escaped and he didn't.
It's an interesting one, Alex. It's interesting. I think a lot of it stems back to Loki and Sylvie. And she killed that variant of, well, it wasn't Kang, was it? But it was played by Jonathan Majors.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't. It wasn't Kang per se. It was the He Who Remains, who had managed to take control of the timelines by getting rid of all the other ones.
So yeah, I think a lot of it stems from that, I guess, because that's what essentially opens up the multiverse. You see all the different timelines happening and all that malarkey. So
yeah,
it's an interesting one. It's a good talking point. So of course, we'd like to reach out to our listeners. And if anyone's got their own views on whose fault it might be, let us know. We'll put in our contact details at the end.
Indeed. But no, it's a really good question. And one to ponder in terms of really whose fault it really is. no doubt what we'll see as a mess unraveling in this this phase five.
Indeed. Last up, we've got Brad from Strong Island Recordings. Brad, we want you on the show. Hurry up.
We do.
Let us know. He said, I thought it was great, personally. Don't understand that negativity at all. It was a psychedelic marvel, pun intended, that set up Kang, who's definitely still alive. Totally agree. And his quest also for revenge against 616, up there with No Way Home and Shang-Chi.
Mm.
It's quite bold. So I actually replied to him. I said in our On The Go episode that, you know, the negativity around these films now are sort of really affecting my excitement.
Yes.
You know, fans sort of immediately want that next Infinity War or Endgame. But, you know, those films didn't happen without 10 years of build-up. And, you know, you can't do those two films on their own. Just wouldn't have happened without all of that storytelling in between and before. So, you know, we're heading that way again with Kang Conquest and Secret Wars. And I think there's going to be a lot more to be announced later this year with San Diego Comic-Con, usually around August, September time. And usually have the Disney Day where they announce stuff as well. So I think we'll probably get a little bit more. I mean, they might dial it back. Who knows? But I think there's a lot of time between Kang Conquest and Secret Wars now where they have shuffled things around a little bit.
Indeed.
So we'll probably get a bit more info on that. And he replied, he said, yeah, exactly. Also, they're dealing with the multiverse. The story has to come together in an even more intricate way to allow for people to cross between. And I, you know, we've said it before about phase four, although it's clustered, there's probably something that's going to tie it together. We just don't quite know how yet. You know, one of our listeners said that, you know, perhaps some of these series are all set in different universes.
Yeah.
Our friend Dan. So we have to see.
It's a fair one. We're making lots of assumptions that actually they're all taking place in 616 and perhaps they're not. And that might be explained as to why some series don't actually acknowledge events of other ones and vice versa. So it could be that actually it's all revealed and something we've made an assumption on for the last, you know, 15, 20 years ends up not being true. I mean, that is the long game. That's really long game.
Mm.
Interesting theory for sure.
And that wraps up for our Quantumania review. So, of course, if you want to get in touch, if you've got any other thoughts or if there's anything you want to cover off in the future, you can contact us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, which is apparently a dangerous social media platform now, on the topic pod. And we've got Gmail, which is onthetopicpodcast@gmail.com. And Alex, we have got WordPress and we've almost caught up on our YouTube.
Nearly, yeah. So our website onthetopicpodcast.wordpress.com, all lowercase, all one word. On there is our ugly mugs, our bios, our whole back catalogue and our newsletter, so you can subscribe and you can be notified the moment a new episode lands. But of course, you're always going to be notified by your podcast provider of preference. So don't worry too much about that. But yeah, we're also on YouTube. So every Thursday, we try do a Throwback Thursday and we're slowly catching up with our back catalogue. And what you can do is subscribe to that. And people are watching and listening on that platform, which is great to see and to hear. So by all means, you can have it on the background or as you're walking along, you know, walking along. If you don't have a podcast player, then you can look and listen and watch us on YouTube too. So like, subscribe and get involved over on that platform. There's literally zero excuse not to listen to an episode of On The Topic.
Nope, absolutely not. Alex, what's coming up? What are we doing next?
I like the idea of the dead internet, Dan. I have been dilly-dallying, having some fun and some frivolity with ChatGPT. So I think what I'm going to do is probably expose you to the very smart AI tech. We're going to have some fun. We'll see what we each other have done, perhaps a bit of homework. And then we could talk about the dead internet. Because there's a theory, Dan, that actually the majority of the content that we are seeing online isn't real. So I think probably that one enticed me more so because we had to have a bit of fun and a bit of homework, show and tell. And of course, then we've got John Wick 4 coming up. So that's being released imminently from the time of this recording.
Yes.
So we know they've got another on the go and another visit to the cinema, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, John Wick 3 was phenomenal. There is our review from the weekly roundup days.
It was, yeah. It was really good. So yeah, looking forward to that. And really, whatever the listener wants to throw at us, really. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the next couple of episodes. Should be good fun.
Well, we've got an entire list of episode ideas set on my phone. Might have a couple of guests lined up, hopefully. It's not always that simple. Sometimes people just aren't that interested. Sometimes they don't reply to our emails. Come on, guys. Just be polite. It's the 21st century. Just if you're not interested, just let us know. But if you are interested, you know, get in touch as well, because we want to hear your backstories. We want to hear what you're up to, what your future's going to be. I don't want to give too much away on who these two organisations might be, but they're local. One is food, one is beer.
Indeed.
So we'll see what happens. We'll keep you all in the loop. And if these go ahead, of course, we'll put the feelers out on our socials, which you should be following now. And if you have any questions for these people, you can throw them our way and then we'll ask them. But keep it kind. But yeah, keep your eyes out on those things.
Indeed.
But Alex, that's it. That's it for another week.
It is.
Oh boy. Well, am I back on Earth 616? Or am I in some weird battle world? I don't really know. I've been Dan.
Well, I'm going to be drinking some very questionable blue fluid and seemingly being able to understand other alien languages. I'm Alex.
And we'll see you next time.